Many patients are upset to learn that doctors don't take the Hippocratic Oath anymore.
National Review columnist Wesley Smith talking about his presentation at the 2019 Issues Etc. Making the Case Conference.
That's a real shame because the Hippocratic Oath protects patient safety. The speech I will give at the conference will describe the consequences of violating Hippocratic values in healthcare and the things that can occur in the healthcare system if we move away from Hippocratic medicine to a more utilitarian bioethics.
You can meet and hear Wesley Smith making the case for the Hippocratic Oath at the one and only 2019 Making the Case Conference, Friday, June 7th and Saturday, June 8th in Chicago. Attendance is limited to 500. Learn more and register at issuesetc.org or call 618-223-8385.
The problem isn't that journalists hate religious people. They actually love religious people whose doctrine basically agrees with the editorial page of the New York Times.
I would say we should be very cautious in shifting from freedom of religion to freedom of worship, which ultimately becomes a facade of freedom.
It's frustrating for me that the Lord says that faith is waiting. Isaiah 40 says those who wait on the Lord will renew their strength. So that part of our faith is waiting with patience while the Lord's slow clock ticks along.
This is Mark from Michigan, and I am a lawnmower listener. We love Issues Etc.
They say that we are addicted to rage. I would nuance that a little bit. I think it's not rage as much as it is moral indignation. We are addicted to moral indignation on both sides of, well, on both sides of what? What's the dividing line where we are both morally outraged at each other across this line? Is it, well, some people say it started with Donald Trump, but I think our memories go farther back than 2016, don't they? The moral indignation that the left has felt for the right and the right has felt for the left goes back much farther than Donald Trump. Are there more things that divide Americans than simply who happens to be the current resident of the White House? Greetings and welcome to Issues Etc. coming to you live on this Thursday afternoon, April the 25th. I'm Todd Wilkin. Thanks for tuning us in. We're going to be spending time in the first few minutes of the program talking with Terry Mattingly, talking about media coverage of evangelical support for President Trump. Pastor Peter Burfein joins us after that. Jordan Peterson is, well, he's popular and growing more popular by the day. YouTube is his medium. He is also deeply anti-institutional, according to Pastor Peter Burfein. We'll find out what he means by that. And then Dr. Matt Richard will join us. We'll talk about Christ alone. Feel free to join us with your questions or comments. Our call-in number 1-877-623-6943. Send us an email, talkback@issuesetc.org, a tweet at issuesetc, and the Issues Etc. listener comment line 618-223-8382. Terry Mattingly joins us to talk about media coverage of evangelical support for President Trump. He's Senior Fellow for Media and Religion at the King's College in New York City, author of the weekly On Religion column for the Universal Syndicate and the book Pop Goes Religion. He's founder and editor of Get Religion. Terry, welcome back.
Glad to be here.
Have you actually been writing the syndicated On Religion column for 31 years now?
This was the 31st anniversary. It was like a week or so ago. I had a column planned to kind of mark that, and then Notre Dame caught on fire. I marked the anniversary during the Notre Dame column, but in a way, the column I wrote this week was the one I had planned to use as the anniversary column, because I always write about the importance of religion news and the fact that the press struggles to get it, which, to rephrase your question, to some degree, I'd like to try to avoid talking about Donald Trump and media coverage of evangelicals and Donald Trump and actually get to what kind of is behind that, kind of what I think is the real subject. I don't think the real subject is Donald Trump. I think the subject is bigger than that. And I read a very important book on that and based my column on that. Have you heard of the book Alienated America by Timothy Carney?
I have.
He would be an excellent guest to bring on. He's a conservative, But at the same time, he's not an evangelical. He's a Catholic, which means there's going to be some social, the views of community and social life that are going to be different there from an evangelical to a Catholic. And I think if you read his book, it's pretty clear that he's no great fan of Donald Trump. He is the commentary editor at the Washington Examiner in Washington, D.C. And he's written what I think is a very important book. And to some degree, instead of focusing on Trump, what he did was try to find out who are the core supporters of Donald Trump and what unites them. What are the common characteristics, he asks, of someone who believes that the American dream is dead? That's kind of the big question that runs through this book. And that's what I wrote my column about this past week.
So is there more that divides America than who happens to occupy the White House right now?
Well, I was reminded when I was reading this book of a statement that James Davison Hunter makes, not in his book Culture Wars, but his book To Change the World, in which he says too often we think of changing the world, changing America, making things better again. We think of this in terms of like thunderstorms, lightning, tornadoes, and hurricanes in the newspaper. In other words, we think of it in terms of big, huge, controversial events that divide us. And Hunter says it's important, instead of that, to think of the culture and to think of changing the culture, to think of it in terms of climate change. Instead of an individual storm, think of what it takes to create a climate of distrust in our government, a climate of anger about what's happening in our nation and its social institutions. So thus, he's looking for the climate that produced the voters who backed Trump, not so much in the general election. And this is something you and I have talked about before. Who voted for Trump in the general election, and especially, yes, white evangelicals, etc., who voted for Trump in the general election, it turns out, is a completely different thing than the factors that determined who voted for him in the primaries. Who wanted Trump more than any of the other Republican candidates? Who was a Trump person from the get-go? What he argues is that those are the people who believe that the American dream is dead, and thus they need to make America great again. And I was utterly fascinated by this idea, as you know, because this is something that I've been writing about and thinking about ever since the election, and in fact, before the election. For example, I guess one of the most famous details there, you and I have mentioned it before, but he has tons of documentation in a variety of different ways. It turns out that if you're looking for the core Trump voter, the core person who believes that the American dream is dead, that person is someone who says religion is very important in his or her life, yet they don't go to church. Did you follow that? Someone who says religion is very important. I mean, I really believe America's in trouble because we've lost our religious values, et cetera, et cetera. But these are people who say that, but then they don't go to church. They don't actually live like a person who believes that religion is the most important thing in their life. Then when you look at certain groups of people who are intensely religiously active, they're in church all the time, they're walking the talk instead of just talking it, it turns out that in the primaries, those people were strongly opposed to Donald Trump. Now, most of them voted for him in the general election, as you and I have discussed, because the only option, realistic option, was Hillary. But in the primaries, they actually not only opposed Trump, they opposed him strongly. I think one of the examples, because this kind of overlaps with Missouri Synod Lutheran country, I think you would be interested in his analysis of the Dutch Calvinists of Iowa and the upper Midwest. And in particular, he notes that in the Iowa caucuses, the county in Iowa that has the highest percentage of self-proclaimed evangelical Christians, and this is also the highest percentage of Dutch Calvinists, Sioux Center, Iowa, Dort College is in this county. When you look at where Sioux County, Iowa, fell in the caucuses, Trump did not win a single precinct in the Iowa caucuses in the most evangelical county in Iowa. It was his worst finish in the entire state. Then you turn that around and you look in Utah. The single most Mormon and the single most Republican county in Utah was the worst county in Utah for Trump. Isn't that interesting? And then when the Wall Street Journal went looking for the ultimate Trump zone, they wanted to find the place where intense loyalty to him came early, where you had the highest percentage of self-proclaimed Make America Great Again people. They ended up in Buchanan County, Virginia, which is a coal country county right near the borders of Kentucky and West Virginia. Very distressed economy, et cetera, et cetera. And this was, according to the Wall Street Journal, the place that wants Donald Trump the most, Buchanan County, Virginia. Now, get this. Out of 3,143 counties in America, Buchanan County, Virginia ranks 3,028th in religious attendance and religious adherence. Now, does that cut against the images of core Trump people that you've probably thought about a lot?
Terry Mattingly is our guest on this Thursday afternoon. We're talking about media coverage of evangelical Trump supporters. He's senior fellow for media and religion at the King's College in New York City, author of the weekly On Religion column for the Universal Syndicate. He's founder and editor of Get Religion. When we come back, why don't the media make that distinction? Two distinctions, actually, between the primary voter and the general voter, and between evangelicals who go to church and those who don't.
Hey, Todd, what have our listeners noticed first when visiting the LPR studios?
Definitely the small size and the dirt.
Well, not anymore. Thanks to our friends at the Cleaning Authority, they've turned this man cave into a space that meets even our wives' approval.
Whether it's our office or your home, the Cleaning Authority is your cleaning service provider in the St. Louis area.
To schedule a free estimate or to find out more, visit thecleaningauthority.com. Thecleaningauthority.com.
Throughout the 50 days of Easter, sacred music for the world. LutheranPublicRadio.org. Listen 24/7 to sacred music for the Easter season. LPR, LutheranPublicRadio.org.
Listen to what you want, when you want. You're listening to Issues, Etc.
I'm going to talk about two big trends in American life over the last 50 or 60 years, the decline of institutional Christianity and the growing polarization of our politics.
Ross Douthat of the New York Times talking about his presentation at the 2019 Issues, Etc. Making the Case conference.
the increasingly strident division between an ideological left and an ideological right. And I'm going to argue that Christianity has weakened precisely because people have become more likely to identify with ideologies than with religious beliefs, and that a recovered Christianity, a more robust public religious faith, is actually an answer to polarization because it gives people an identity that's bigger than partisanship, so they can define themselves as Christians first and liberals or conservatives second.
You can meet and hear Ross Douthat at the Issues Etc. Making the Case Conference, June 7th and 8th in Chicago. Learn more at issuesetc.org. Welcome back to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. Terry Mattingly is our guest, Senior Fellow for Media and Religion at the King's College in New York City, author of the Weekly on Religion column for the Universal Syndicate, and the book Pop Goes Religion. He's founder and editor of Get Religion. Terry, before the break, you were talking about how these simple distinctions, like between primary voters and general election voters, or even more finely tuned, between evangelicals that decry the loss of religious influence in society but never go to church or seldom go to church, and evangelicals who are deeply active in their religious life, why don't the media recognize or point out those distinctions?
Well, Carney's theory on that is similar to my own, which is simple, that the word evangelical has become a curse word, and thus you want to be able to blame evangelicals. And a part of that blaming of the evangelicals is the ability to say that these evangelicals really don't have a consistent set of moral and cultural beliefs, that this isn't about doctrine, it's just about politics, and they use religion as a club to hit people over the head with to make political points. But you lose that ability to simplify that if it turns out that the 81% of people who voted for Trump in the general election, the 81% of white evangelicals, you lose that if it turns out that half of them really wanted Trump and the other half didn't want him at all. In fact, actively opposed him and opposed his life and what he stands for, but felt they had no choice in the reality of the general election. You lose the ability to quote 81% of white evangelicals love Donald Trump. And that's just such a comforting thing to be able to say in terms of the worldview of the press. Back to the book Alienated America, one of the things that got my attention was how he digs into factors that create this climate of alienation, which has helped create on among people who are thought of as conservatives, this anger and this alienation. And at one point in the book, talking about Buchanan County, Virginia, he says, it turns out that, quote, economic woe, social dysfunction, family collapse, and community erosion are the factors that go into creating an area that's going to be very pro-Trump early on. Again, economic woe, social dysfunction, family collapse, and community value erosion, plus a lack of thriving religious institutions. So it's actually a number of different factors then minus religion. He said, so you shouldn't look for thriving churches in the heart of Donald Trump territory. You would look for the absence of thriving churches. Now, it's easy to think of particular suburban churches in parts of America that don't fit this mold. He, in his book, lays out a host of different statistics and shows how this runs consistently. And I was reminded also of something, one of my favorite thinkers in American life, the late Senator Daniel Patrick Moynihan. You may remember, you've heard me quote his famous statement, that we're entering into a period of life, and he wrote this in the late 60s and early 70s, we're entering into a period of American life in which the most important factor in determining the health of a person, their economic viability, their ability to find work, to hold a job, to be a successful person, the common denominator will not be their race, but whether or not they have a father. And he was saying that the essential core climate change item in the American story is the health of marriage and the family. Now, Carney is kind of agreeing with that, but he's adding in that religion seems to be the single most important community value factor in American life. In other words, you have the home, you have marriage, how did you grow up, etc. And then at the community value level in America, the most important social institutions that bind and combine us are religious. Now, think about where we are right now with the rise of the nuns, the rise of the religiously unaffiliated as the largest political group in the Democratic Party, the religiously affiliated actives and people who claim they are being the biggest group within the Republicans. You can begin to see a pretty easy set of dividing lines here in America where you end up kind of with a Brexit America. You end up with this incredibly strong divide that shows up in all the polls between successful American urban areas and the heartland of America, some of which is doing well and some of it is simply falling apart. We see this similar divides in other parts of the world. And the only one that I know of in particular is that in England, religion seems to be a part of that divide as well. One point, he makes an interesting comment that if you want to succeed in America, this is like an update on the Daniel Patrick Moynihan. There's two groups of people in America who don't believe the American dream is dead. They have some sense of hope and some sense of ability to be positive about their lives. And these are the richest 1% of people in America. They're doing fine, and they think they're doing fine, and they like their lives. And the other group of people that fall into that category are the intensely religious and the people who are actually living it and practicing it. So there's two ways to succeed in America. You can be really rich and very successful and be in the top 1%, or you can go to church a lot. Isn't that a fascinating summary?
It truly is fascinating. I doubt it will ever be incorporated even the smallest bit into the media narrative on this. And I want to play devil's advocate on that media narrative. They're going to pull out a list of names, very recognizable names like Jerry Falwell Jr., Paul White, Franklin Graham, Richard Land, Robert Jeffress, James Dobson. He bought in early into these things. And they're going to say, these are intensely religious people. These are the thought leaders of evangelicalism. What do you mean we're getting this narrative wrong on evangelical support?
Yeah, and their flocks to some degree fit it. And that tends to be in fairly successful parts of the nation and in areas that are doing pretty well. But once again, you'd have to read Carney's book. He's got the statistics pointing to the fact that the strongest common denominators in creating a core Trump person. Here, that list again. Economic woes, social dysfunction, the collapse of the family unit, community erosion, meaning the erosion of community centers and social capital. That's the big word, social capital. So if you want a Donald Trump mad, yelling, screaming Trump supporter in the primaries, you look for an area with economic woes, social dysfunction, family collapse, community erosion, and weakened churches, weak attendance in church. He said you're looking for empty pews, not full pews, if you're looking for the early core supporters of Trump statistically. And he has some other examples besides the three I've already mentioned cutting against the grain. These intensely religious areas in the heartland of America that they considered Trump proud. They considered him intolerant. They considered him, they thought his attitude toward the poor and refugees and immigrants cut against their, now this is Carney talking as a Catholic, against their seamless garment view of what it means to be pro-life, where caring for the weak and the lost is similar to caring for the unborn. It's a very provocative thesis, and we saw some evidence of this in the polls early on. World Magazine was one of the first magazines to really begin calling attention to this factor, that it turned out the most active evangelicals and Catholics and other really intense Mormons as well, the really intense religious believers, they were Republicans, they were conservatives, they didn't want Donald Trump. I think in a podcast a long time ago, I said something, and it's a horrible social stereotype, but we're talking more about evangelicals in pickup trucks than we're talking about evangelicals in minivans, you know, with lots of kids loading into the van and heading to church, with an intact family, a healthy family structure, etc. Those people didn't want Donald Trump. And he's got several chapters in this book that make that case quite strongly. And I thought also, I heard him on reliable sources on the podcast, the CNN podcast of reliable sources. He was on there with Brian Stelter. They're talking about why the media can't get this. And then they both agree this is something the national media doesn't know about because the national media doesn't care about religion. And then Stelter makes an interesting statement. He says that religion is hard for the media to cover. He says it affects America nationwide, but it's hard for journalists to see since, and here's a direct quote, since there's not a bill being introduced in Congress or there's not a press conference happening in New York City, unquote. Doesn't that kind of fit some of the ideas we talk about on these podcasts a lot? In other words, religion isn't that big a deal in the Acela zone between Washington, New York, and perhaps up to Boston. And you end up with kind of a media blindness to what's going on out there in Iowa and Utah and parts of Texas, Virginia, etc. It's like the nation's divided half and half, and the press is pretty much only interested in covering half of it.
We're talking about media coverage of evangelical Trump supporters. Terry Mattingly is our guest, author of the weekly On Religion column for the Universal Syndicate and the book Pop Goes Religion. Of course, in the general election, Donald Trump won because Hillary Clinton lost. That seems axiomatic, but it does raise the question, how big a factor is who runs against him in 2020 when we recognize that divide in evangelical support? Concordia Publishing House's Spring Warehouse Sale is both online and in-store. Take advantage of discounted prices on many of the items you hear promoted on Issues Etc. from Friday, May 3rd through Monday, May the 6th. You'll find major cost savings on books, music, Bibles, educational resources, and more. Concordia Publishing House's Spring Warehouse Sale, cph.org, and 3558 South Jefferson in St. Louis. Concordia Publishing House's Spring Warehouse Sale, May 3rd through the 6th.
Talk radio for the thinking Christian. You're listening to Issues Etc.
Memoria Press now offers 8 levels of the Simply Classical curriculum for children with special needs. These full-year packages help you teach reading, writing, arithmetic, art and music, poetry, science, history, Latin, classical and Christian studies in incremental and multisensory ways for mastery. Visit classicalspecialneeds.com and enter promo code LPR9 to save on resources for your home or school.
Welcome back to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. We're talking about media coverage of evangelical Trump supporters. Terry Mattingly is our guest. Deaconess Lynn Fredrickson just gave us a report yesterday. We have almost 100 more paid attendees for this year's Issues Etc. Making the Case conference compared to our 2018 conference. Making the Case is Friday, June 7th and Saturday, June 8th in Chicago. Don't wait to register. Attendance is limited to 500. If you'd like to attend, but you're wondering, what do I do with my children? Child care is free thanks to the Lutheran Church Extension Fund sponsorship. Registration is $125 and includes three meals. It's the premier conference for Christian laity, the one and only 2019 Making the Case Conference, June 7th and 8th at Concordia University, Chicago. Terry, if the media does not recognize the distinction between the evangelical primary voter who voted for Trump and the evangelical general election voter who voted for Trump holding their nose, many of them, are they going to miss the all-important factor there, which is who runs against him in the general election?
Now, in the general election, I thought you were going to say, would anybody dare run against him in the primaries, especially if he has been impeached and then a vote fails in the Senate? That's an interesting question. I mean, it kind of to some degree brings us back to our discussion the other day of Mayor Pete Buttigieg and the attempts to create kind of a religious left. Now, Obama, with his ability to appeal to black churches strongly, especially in his first campaign, and his articulation of a very personal, strong, liberal Christian faith, Obama crossed over quite a bit into the evangelical world. It so far seems like the only people who are going to consider running against Trump in the primaries are going to run to the cultural and social left of him, which means to some degree you're not giving conservative Catholics, evangelicals, etc., an option to vote for a GOP cultural conservatism. They're left stranded again. If you look Trump versus Democrats, who would you say is the potential candidate who appeals to evangelicals on the other side? I mean, I've you know, you hear rumors right now that there are some Republicans who are thinking of endorsing Joe Biden just as kind of a return to normal candidate. And I have to admit that if someone like Kamala Harris agreed to run as the vice presidential candidate with Joe Biden, and Biden said, I'll only serve for one term because of my age, that to me would be a really hard ticket for Trump to defeat, especially since Biden, unlike Hillary, who's pretty much going to ignore the blue-collar Midwest, Joe Biden would go there and camp out. And meanwhile, Kamala Harris would be courting the women's vote and the African-American vote and kind of the woke people of color vote, so to speak. That would be a very interesting ticket. But meanwhile, the Democrats just have more and more and more and more candidates. I don't have any sense of what they're doing. But I guess then again, I'm not all that interested in partisan politics. So I'm not the guy to answer that question in the long run, I guess.
Why is it essential that the media coverage makes a distinction between simply self-identified religious labels and worship attendance?
Well, to some degree, there are fault lines inside the support for Trump. And the reason we don't see these fault lines is because the Democratic Party is in an era where they're so far left that, I mean, there's no realistic chance to vote for anyone else if the most important issues to you are religious liberty, abortion, and the cultural issues, which in many ways are not a left versus right issue if you know the history of the pro-life movement in America. And if you back up to the Clinton era, ironically, in terms of left-right support for religious liberty. But it's where we are right now that matters. And right now, being pro-religious liberty is conservative. And being in favor of laws to limit, if not ban, abortion is thought of as a completely conservative position. I don't see many options for those Republicans. So I guess you could make a case, play devil's advocate like you did a while ago, and say, well, then the media has no need to actually recognize the complexities inside the world of evangelicalism, Catholicism, and Mormonism in terms of who actually supports Trump and who opposes him in every way that they can and wish they could vote for someone else somehow, that if only our political system would give them the ability to vote for someone other than Donald Trump without betraying the issues that matter the most to them. I don't see them being let out of that dilemma anytime soon, unless there's a stronger case against Trump for impeaching him, or at least impeaching him and getting far enough in it and showing material that's strong enough that someone on the cultural right might run against him in the Republican primaries, at which point things would get really interesting, I think, real quick.
Terry Mattingly is Senior Fellow for Media and Religion at the King's College in New York City. He is author of the weekly On Religion column for the Universal Syndicate and the book Pop Goes Religion. He's also founder and editor of Get Religion. Terry, thank you very much.
Glad to be here.
When we come back from this break, we're going to turn to the subject of Jordan Peterson. He is a YouTube phenomenon. There are people who imbibe of him on a daily basis. It's almost like Bible study. In fact, he does do Bible study, even though he does not claim to be a Christian in any sense other than perhaps culturally or ethically. It's hard to tell. Pastor Peter Burfein will join us to talk about Jordan Peterson's anti-institutionalism, and he says kind of an insipid Gnosticism, too. We'll be right back. Nadia Bolz Weber calls for a sexual reformation in her latest book, Shameless. How does her reformation compare with the truths rediscovered during the 16th century Reformation? I've written a review of Shameless in the latest Issues Etc. journal. We'll send it to you for free. Just click the red journal subscription button on the right-hand column at issuesetc.org. In the Wittenberg Trail feature, Pastor Andrew Abraham details his journey from Catholic priest to Lutheran pastor. The free online Issues Etc. journal.
Discover a truly Lutheran approach to education. Concordia University Chicago's Center for the Advancement of Lutheran Liberal Arts supports a vibrant, growing community of classical educators. Whether you're a teacher, administrator, parent, or homeschooler, we have the resources and contacts you need to start a child's journey into the Lutheran Liberal Arts. Visit cuchicago.com. .edu/Calla. That's C-A-L-L-A.
Your comprehensive source for information, teaching, and truth. You're listening to Issues Etc.
Hi, this is Pastor Eric Lang of Redeemer Lutheran Church in Gresham, Oregon. One thing I've asked of the Lord, to gaze upon the beauty of the Lord and to inquire in His temple. Mount Hood, Multnomah Falls, the Oregon coast. Oregon is beautiful. But nothing compares to the beauty of the Lord's house. If you are vacationing in the Portland area, please come join us at Redeemer Lutheran Church in Gresham, where the liturgy lives and God's people worship as one. For more information, go to wheretheliturgylives.org.
Emmanuel Press is a Lutheran-owned business in Fort Wayne, Indiana, in operation since 2004. That's 15 years of publishing liturgical and devotional books. 15 years of collaborating with Lutheran authors, artists, and translators. Thanks to our loyal customers and Issues Etc., we look forward to many more years of confessing and teaching the Christian faith. Visit us online at emmanuelpress.us, E-M-M-A-N-U-E-L, press.us.